this is Everett, producer of The Scalpel. Today, a special presentation, a simulcast of The Charlie Kirk Show. Dr. Rose was recently a guest, and this is an in-depth conversation about Afghanistan, tapping into sources that Dr. Rose has on the ground in Afghanistan, as well as his knowledge of the region. We're going to talk about what's going wrong. Can it be made right? How can it be made right? And whether or not our leadership, from Joe Biden to his woke generals, are capable of fixing this situation and saving the lives of thousands of Americans stranded in Afghanistan. Here we go.
Hey, everybody. Today on The Charlie Kirk Show, a special bonus episode with my friend, Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com.
The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Everybody, welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. With us is my friend, Dr. Keith Rose. Keith, welcome back.
Thanks, brother.
You are the jack of all trades, kind of a Swiss Army knife. You served in Afghanistan.
I worked in Afghanistan. I've been a part of the intelligence community. So I worked there for a little bit over a decade.
So you've been there for over 10 years, in and out.
Yeah, about 12 years, in and out between there and Pakistan.
So you have a great understanding of that region and the complexities. And I consider you to be an expert, and in the intelligence community, you know even more than most. So,
but we did a lot of humanitarian work too. Ironically enough, we helped a lot of people, and we helped build a medical infrastructure, which is so critical.
I only say this just to establish our credibility before we get into all of this very important stuff, so people don't say, "Oh, who is this guy?" But you really know what's going on the ground, Keith. On a scale of Saigon to Iran, how bad is it right now in Kabul?
Saigon to Iran, we're actually establishing a new low. I wouldn't even put it on the scales spectrum with Saigon to Iran. Each had their own problems. But what we have now is something that even who I consider some of the sharpest minds in the intelligence services and even in the military retired folks, no one saw this coming. This is an unforced era of galactic proportions right now. I mean, it could turn into one of the greatest humanitarian crises in the history of not only our country, but the world.
So let's go through the timeline. And so you were there for 12 years. We pushed the Taliban out of Kabul very quickly, fought them in the Kandahar Valley, and Biden made the decision to withdraw. And so talk about how that decision was made, not to withdraw, but it seems to be an ideological withdrawal. I mean, one of the dumbest military strategies I've ever seen.
You couldn't call it a strategy. I mean, unless it's a strategy for failure. And really, the interesting thing, Charlie, from 100,000 foot view, we were there 20 years, four presidents, trillions of dollars to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. I mean, if you think about that, why were we there that long? It's important to understand, where does the Taliban get the fuel for their car? We all know most of it comes from Pakistan. A lot of it comes from the Pakistani intelligence services,
or the ISI. Right. You can't trust those guys.
Well, you really can't trust those guys because they also support a gentleman who we have worked against our entire time by the name of Siraj Haqqani, who from my reports from my guys says is on his way to Kabul. And we cannot.
Who is that, Keith?
Siraj Haqqani is a gentleman that has a $5 million bounty on his head. He runs the Haqqani's network. He likes to hold himself out as a mujahideen, a great jihadi, but he's really the turban version of Tony Soprano.
He's about
the money. He's the guy that was responsible for the kidnapping of David Rhodes, the New York Times reporter.
Yeah, the journalist. Yeah.
The journalist. He was responsible for the kidnapping of Bo Bergdahl. In fact,
the traitor. Yeah.
The traitor. In fact, a little inside baseball. We knew where Bo Bergdahl was. There was an active working group that had a plan to get Bo Bergdahl out that was solid.
And I want to just tell our listeners, Bo Bergdahl was, he abandoned his company, and we traded five Gitmo prisoners for Bo Bergdahl. This is a big controversy in the Obama era. Just catching
absolutely.
Up our
audience. And one of those Gitmo prisoners we traded, I believe it's the number two person in the Taliban right
That's
now
right.
that rolled into
And Taliban. He said he was just a shopkeeper, wanted to look after his dad. So, Keith, we're going to kind of jump all over the
sure.
place, but I want to talk about what's happening now. What is happening in Kabul? Because we're being told by the Biden regime, and that's what they are, everything's fine, just get to the airport, no problem. What is the truth, based on your intelligence, of what's happening in Kabul?
What's going on in Kabul right now, and I apologize, I haven't slept much in the past 4 days.
That's okay.
There's a lot of really, just let me couch this, there's a lot of really good people. I'm just a cog in the wheel, that's how tired I am, of folks working, but we're coordinating efforts because the problem in Kabul right now is that we cannot get our people, the people that helped us, the people that hold American passports that are being turned away because they're not on a quote list, into the airport. Now the Brits and the Aussies have sent teams out, and they're picking their folks up.
Outside of the airport.
Outside the wire.
So they've authorized their special forces to go find their citizens, and we haven't.
We haven't. Our guys could do it. We have the best of the best.
That's called an NEO, right? Is that right?
Our rules of engagement.
Yes.
And so, but they're locking them down right now. They're not allowing them to go do that because I believe that this administration and the leadership, this is what we're seeing as a galactic failure of leadership. This is what happens, Charlie, when you elect people based on their wokeness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you understand General Milley, the chairman of the Joint yeah. Chiefs, and General Austin, who's the Secretary of Defense, both of those were colonels that were passed over twice for promotion. We call them
wow.
double passovers. They were unpromotable. There's a reason in the system when you're not promoted, it means there's no spot for you. You don't have the leadership capabilities to go to the next level, yet somehow, miraculously, their careers were revived under President Obama, and I believe General Petraeus had something to do with it, bringing these guys forward. And now they're at the highest points of leadership, and I can tell you firsthand that they're locked in a room staring at a TV and they don't know what to do because they're not warfighters.
Yeah, and we did a whole podcast on this, which is Milley and Austin are CRT in action, right? Which
right.
is the only type of white male they like is a self-hating, obedient white male.
Sure.
And then a diversity pick, Lloyd Austin.
Of course.
But that's a separate issue. Let's go straight to the ground and Kabul.
So the ground right now is our troops can't leave. And here's an important note. We have, you hear it on the news, we're authorized for 6,000 troops. Biden authorized 6,000 troops on the ground. As of when I checked it last, and that was probably a few hours ago, there's only 2,500 plus troops on the ground because they are slow dripping these troops in a battalion at a time.
Why are we not acting with urgency, Keith?
Well, because we're doing a measured response, Charlie, and it's the way it was described to me. And this is urgency. This is, we have a lot of problems here. We have the Taliban. And the Taliban, to understand them, is not just the Taliban. We have the largest number of foreign fighters that we've seen in Afghanistan to date. And this was reported, and the reason I know this was reported to the Pentagon, and the reason I know this was reported in the intelligence services, is because I delivered those reports. And we said, and I'm sure other people did, we gave them video evidence. We said we are seeing an uptick. And this is a year, 2 years ago.
I remember you and I talking about
foreign fighters
this. Yes.
in Afghanistan.
Remember you and I had that
yes.
conversation.
And I showed you the video. And I said,
yes.
they're not even fighting. Now, we were doing just our duty as patriots, reporting on what we call atmospherics. I do a lot of relief work, and I wanted to make sure people that I worked with were safe. So when I would get these reports, we would get eyewitness reports from people that have worked with us a long time saying, we have people that are not Afghans that are coming in. And the interesting thing was they weren't fighting. They were waiting. They had excellent equipment in what we call kit, and they were just biding their time and growing in number. And if you look at this from a strategic standpoint, we now have more Al-Qaeda, whether they're Uzbek, Chechen, wherever they come from on the spectrum, in Afghanistan than we did when we got there in the first place. It's much more dangerous. Add on top of that the fact that we abandon our weapons, our equipment, and bombs
to the enemy.
To the enemy. And the interesting thing, I saw CNN said Taliban seized weapons in Bagram. They didn't seize them.
They stumbled
upon them. It was an Easter egg
hunt. Yes, that's
right. I mean, they went in there and they were like, surprise, here we are. And those weapons, there's a reason that this is important. We have an eyewitness report as of 2 days ago that three flatbed trucks, each with two MRAPs.
What is that?
MRAPs are the large armored vehicles we transport our troops with, but they have armor systems and weapon systems, armor and weapon systems. And the armor is top secret. It's a new type of armor, and they're being taken to Pakistan. Most likely they'll end up in China Russia, and it'll be reverse engineered. Mm-hmm. So we now have, and you've seen the pictures on TV, you now have Taliban carrying American weapons. We're seeing M4s, SAWs, ACOGs. They have our optics, our night vision. And they're walking around, they're wearing our helmets and our kit. And this is why this is important. It's showing the world that not only are we withdrawing from Afghanistan, this is a humiliation of epic proportions. And in a time right now, geopolitically, when our allies should be emboldened because they're our allies, they're having, I imagine, a lot of second thoughts, like places in Taiwan. So if you want to know why we're doing this, I can't tell you, but the effects are going to be felt globally.
Yeah, the intentions I can speculate, and that's what we do a lot of, and we're usually right. But I want to get down to the logistics of this, because there's something I'm quite not understanding. And so the airport is one of the only airstrips in all of Afghanistan, right? This is a 6th century country, and we basically built that airport. If I'm not
well, the
mistaken.
Most secure airstrip we had, Charlie, was Bagram Airfield.
And we abandoned
and easy
it,
to
right?
defend, and we abandoned it.
Yeah, and so some people are saying we should go retake that. And so the Kabul airport, we have control of. Is that correct?
We have the interior of Kabul airport, but a C-17, a large transport, left today. And on its lift out right over the airport, it was shooting off flares. So we have control of it, but
who was shooting off flares?
The airplane.
Okay.
Because
what is that? What's the significance of that?
They're concerned maybe there's some anti-aircraft weapons, some air-to-surface missiles.
Or a Taliban
surface-to-air missiles.
Put a rocket-propelled grenade out.
Yeah, and who? Well, no, or a heat-seeking. That's what the flares are for something like a Stinger.
Oh,
and
wow.
We don't.
Okay.
I would like to know, did we leave those in Bagram? I will tell you, we did have a report of those type of weapons getting to the Taliban a year ago.
So we control the interior of this airport, but on the exterior, in the streets of Kabul and the other villages, how many Americans are there, Keith? Because our own government doesn't even know this.
We are collecting information. We have people working around the clock collecting information from friends, guys that work there like I did, humanitarian workers, everyone that worked there, and we're collecting this massive amount of information. The best guess I can have with American passports is over 10,000. And these are Americans. Look at it. You know how some people go to Mexico to visit their family? They're American citizens. They're third-generation Mexicans, but Americans. Third-generation Americans that are Mexican, and they go to Mexico to visit their parents. A lot of people knew that Kabul would eventually fall, so they went to see their families. What they didn't understand was that the president of Afghanistan would leave in the middle of the night, turn over the city.
$169 million.
Right. And $169 million in cash, as the report, would have to be...
That's like two Gulfstreams full of cash.
No, but it is like a C-130. So my question is, did we fly him out? I don't know that. But I think it's a question that should be asked because we're watching, Charlie, just so you ask about Saigon. When Saigon fell...
When we're pushing helicopters into the ocean.
Joe Biden has an interesting history in all this because Joe Biden was the senator that blocked the aid that President Ford requested after Saigon fell to help the refugees. And he said, and this is easily researchable, F those guys. We don't owe them anything. He blocked the aid. He's one of the nastiest, meanest, vile people that is a racist.
Yes.
He has shown a history. He worked with Senator Byrd. He has been shown
former KKK
Grand Wizard. He has a racist history. Yeah. And this is not political. This is just describing Joe. So he's done this before.
He is very vengeful, and people don't realize that about his personality. So there's 10,000 Americans. Where are they in Kabul? Are they in restaurants and diners? I mean, explain to us what's actually happening on the streets of Kabul, because this is hard for Americans, including myself, to kind of does the Taliban control every neighborhood? Do they control every street yet? Or is it just kind of this unspoken, like they are in charge now?
The Taliban are in charge. They're not everywhere.
They're not ubiquitous.
Not ubiquitous, but they're there. And here's what people don't understand. The larger city centers, they're doing a charm offensive. But the smaller areas, to give you an example, someone that helped us in a smaller province, I received a video the other night from a relative, and it was him being executed by the Taliban.
American?
No, he was Afghan, but he had worked against the Taliban. The other thing is we're hearing the Taliban have the biometric data of a lot of people. And the interesting thing is we had something called Bats and Eyes, where we would go out and collect biometric data that our military would, retinal scans, fingerprints. And somehow the Taliban has gotten a hold of that data. And you ask where the people are. Some of them are hiding in houses. Some of them with family members. I know of one lady who is an American citizen. Her child with her does not even speak anything but English. She was turned away with her passport from the gate three times because she wasn't on the list. Well, and to give people some credit, it's very hard because everyone is at the gates right now. And so there's no processing center.
This sounds like a mess.
It's beyond, but there's a way to fix this. There's a way to create a processing center. There's a way to set up an orderly processing, and I don't, for security reasons, I don't want to go into how we're doing this, but we're shooting for this goal. It's not getting planes into Kabul, and it's not getting people on the list. It's getting them from the street into the airport. And right now we have Taliban that are beating people. They're not committing the atrocities too much in public. They are committing some. They've killed the four ladies that were trained in the Air Force, the Afghan women. One was stoned, and the other three were killed on the roof of the palace. There are many confirmed reports that the Taliban are going to wait till we leave.
Yes.
And when we leave, they're going to systematically go through.
There's a little bit of kind of a self-control order, like keep yourself in line a little bit.
Right.
You know, don't overly agitate the Americans. But what's to say that they're not going to start to kidnap a couple Americans?
I pray, because they still have the ability to make money right now without kidnapping them. And I don't want to go into details, but we want to get our people out safe. That's the most important thing, is getting people out safely. The Taliban could change at any moment. I believe that some of their leaders are trying to show that they could govern differently.
And to the international.
And to the international community. And I think that's great. My prayer is that the Taliban will back up and allow people to leave. But here's what concerns me. Joe Biden has set August 31st for a tentative, like we're going to be out by August 31st. September 11th has meaning in the Middle East. And what we're seeing, I believe, is what happened thousands of years ago when Jerusalem was attacked by Saladin. When Jerusalem was attacked by Saladin, there were 12 days of some of the most intense fighting. And on the 12th day, they took Jerusalem. It's 12 days from the 31st to September 11th. Now, the Middle Easterners, the Southeast Asians, the Afghans, they have 4,000 plus years of history, and it means something to them. Joe Biden can't remember what he did yesterday. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pay attention to history and understand that this is significant and they could use this, and this is what bugs a lot of us that spent time there. This is the fulfillment of what Osama bin Laden started. He wrote about it, and we handed it to him. And it didn't have to happen this way.
So in the current moment, this could go wrong at any time.
The other thing, to answer your question on the ground, we're concerned about. In 2006, there was an accident with one of the MRAPs. They hit some local fruit vendors and some people were injured. Well, anytime that happens in Afghanistan, you could get 1,000, 2,000 people crowding around, see what's going on. A soldier panicked and shot into the crowd with his 50. Some people were killed, and there was a mass riot, and it almost leveled that side of the city. Our concern is a mass riot to get into the airport. If you have 100,000 people trying to kick down the walls,
that could happen.
That could. And so what we're trying to do is figure out from our leaders, and we can't get in touch with them now. We understand that they are paralyzed.
Who is running? I mean, from what I understand, the way that the military apparatus is built, that they have different continental commands, right? So someone's in charge of Africa or Europe. Who's in charge on the ground? Mark Miller.
I don't want to go into names, but there's a general that's in charge on the ground there that's doing a great job. He really is. There are a couple.
He's actually there in Kabul.
He's in Kabul.
He just must be losing his mind over
but
this.
But he can only do so much with the support that he's given. There's folks at the UN that are there now. They're not the official UN guys that are always there.
Waste of time.
But the guys that are running it now, good guys, because they're not the typical UN guys. The people that are there understand the mission. The American people understand the mission. The only people that are holding back this from being a successful endeavor are behind closed doors looking at a TV screen, and they're paralyzed with fear. And that would be the Biden administration and the Joint Chiefs.
But all of a sudden, 100 American soldiers are going to die or something? Which is a legitimate fear. I mean,
you're seeing it. You've seen it with the coronavirus. You've seen it with our military. The southern border wide open. When you promote people based on ideology and not competence, when a true disaster hits, It lays them bare for all the world to see.
So, successful in the terms of a disaster, right? I mean, I guess what we're talking about is the success right now is no Americans die, but Kabul has fallen. Afghanistan has fallen.
Kabul was handed away. Afghanistan, interesting enough, there is a resistance in the Panjshir.
Yeah, talk about that. And where is the Panjshir?
The Panjshir is the northern plains.
Because Kabul is southeast.
Well, Kabul's kind of in the center.
It's right near the Pakistan border.
Well, it's
right?
2 hours from Jalalabad, and Jalalabad's near the Turkan border, which is near Pakistan. Kabul is not in the middle of the spoke, but it's kind of there. If you go north and east, you're going up into the Panjshir, which was where Massoud, the Lion of the Panjshir, that was executed before 9/11. He was the charismatic great leader in Afghanistan. His son is now the number one military commander for a gentleman by the name of Amirullah Saleh. He was a former head of the NDS, which is the Afghan intelligence, who is now the de facto president of Afghanistan. He is a serious man. He is a man that is wise. He's got great tactics. He is a strategist, and he has a lot of strategy. And he is working with a very charismatic young Massoud. So they are making a stand there, and I pray that we somehow figure out a way to support these guys, because at the end of the day, we've had this conversation. The Afghans can take care of things. We pushed the wrong thing. We built up an army with people that we just looked at numbers and money. We didn't look at who we were bringing into the army, who we were training. We didn't work with the militias that were already established in the good fighters. We brought in a lot of guys from wherever we could put a warm body, and there was no organized building.
How is it possible the Taliban took back Kabul so quickly? I mean, that's hard for me to believe. 150,000, 300,000 Afghan fighters, you know, they allegedly had an air force. How is that possible?
Well, they had an air force, but the Biden administration didn't let the contractors that work on the planes back in the country. So they have an air force, but they don't have maintenance. You can't fly a plane without maintenance. They didn't fire a shot to take Kabul.
How is that possible?
Well, when the president left with money, with lots of cash, and says, I'm giving it to the Taliban. I know where I was when that happened. I had friends calling me going, what just happened? I think in the final analysis, we're going to learn these, but the Taliban could have been held at bay. We were doing that with just 2,500 troops. We were holding them at bay, but we stopped flying what we call tactical air. We stopped giving air support. We stopped paying attention to the actual intelligence reports that were being passed. I'm not alone in this. It's come out now. The State Department knew. The intelligence community said they warned. But at the end of the day, President Biden was right. The buck stopped with him. We were always going to leave Afghanistan. But the way we are leaving, I mean, look at the number of Americans we lost at Pearl Harbor.
2,000 plus.
Yeah. Look at the number of Americans we lost at 9/11.
Yeah, 3,000.
We went over to Afghanistan because of 9/11.
Yeah.
And we stand to lose up to five times as many people and up to four times as many American citizens by our own malfeasance in the way we're pulling this exit. We haven't put enough troops in. We're not allowing our troops to go out into the city and get our people, all because of a leadership, not our rank and file, not the mid-level guys, but a leadership that feels like it's more important that you understand white rage, that you understand critical race theory. I can promise you, the soldiers on the ground don't care what color you are. They care about the guy on their left and the guy on their right. They care about their brothers. We call each other brother. No one cares what color you are. And so when you it's real simple, Charlie. When we came on a forward operating base one time, we were in Afghanistan, we'd been out in the sticks, and we were stopped by a young officer, and he said, "You guys need a wheel walker." And I looked at my buddy, and he goes, rolled his eyes. And a wheel walker means you need someone walking next to your vehicle so you don't go faster than the person walking, so there's no accident, because it's a safety issue. We're in a war zone on an operating base, forward operating base, but we need a wheel walker. When the officer walked off, I looked at my buddy, and I go, "Bro, what's up?" And he goes, "Simple, bud." He goes, "When you have nothing important to do, the unimportant becomes important." Mm. And what you've seen right now is you have an administration and a military leadership that had a lot of important to do, but they made the unimportant critical race theory,
yes,
wokeness, important. And the important stuff has risen up because history has a way of just, you know, sticking its head up. And we're not ready for it.
So now I want to get into the implications of this. Internally in the White House, based on any sources that you, how are they processing? Do they processing this? Do they realize? I'm sure they do realize. Give us some insight into what the atmosphere is there. I mean, I believe this has thwarted their entire political agenda. Well, this is not going away.
We stopped being Democrats and Republicans when this happened. We're Americans. Our country is in extremis. Our allies don't trust us and our enemies don't fear us. And no society survives like that. And currently, right now, I believe, and from what I understand, the Biden administration, it's not that they not only don't know what to do, they don't know where to look to find what to do.
How is that possible in a multi-trillion dollar government and a multi-trillion dollar military apparatus? No one knows how to win a war?
When you have nothing important to do, the unimportant has been important. You got rid of the people that know how to fight a war. Charlie, in World War II, a lot of generals were fired.
Or killed.
Because they weren't. There was a guy named General Lawton who was in the Japanese theater, was in the Asian theater. He was very successful, 38 years old. General Eisenhower recognized what a stud this guy was and brought him over to the European theater. Eisenhower fired his West Point roommate and put this guy in charge. And when he was asked why, he said, "Because he fights and he wins." We don't do that anymore. We haven't won a war since World War II. We don't fire people for lack of winning. We don't look upwards. And that's, and eventually, you know, when the music stops, we're standing, there's not a chair.
Yeah, and so the one thing about war is that it does deal in objective truth, where wokeism doesn't. It's either you're alive or you're dead. You control the city or you don't. And the entire idea of wokeism, which has now infiltrated the military, is that, well, 2 + 2 can equal 5. Well, that's fine. You can believe something that's not true. Do you control Kabul?
Right.
That's an objective measurement, right? Who's in control?
Right. But here's why they can't understand who's in control. This is the administration that says men can have babies.
That's right. So you think all of these things are tied together? Obviously, I do.
I know they're tied together because, again, history is the ultimate arbiter of truth. That's why the winners like to rewrite history sometime. Mm-hmm. But the whole way we go forward is history is our story, you know. It's truth, and we have to understand it. And as tragic as this is, we could still pull this out. More importantly, I believe this administration has been shown for the failures that they are.
Yeah.
I don't believe Joe Biden remembers what he did 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but there's people around him that are.
They do, and they don't know what to do.
And so talk about the ramifications for their political agenda internally. Are they scrambling? I mean, this can't be good for any of their ambitions. I'm sure you've seen Biden's poll numbers have taken double-digit turns negative in almost every state. I mean, he is sub negative in state. He's like tied for favorability in Oregon, Keith. He's down 30 point favorability in Ohio. I mean, this is serious stuff. Not that I want to politicize this, but no, politics is how you control the White House, right?
Their own internal polling right now shows that 1 in 10 Democrats, I mean, hardcore progressive leftists, have turned away from them and no longer support them. They just lost 10% of their base, not the independents.
And they can't explain this away. It just seems that
even CNN can't explain it away.
There's something kind of in the intuition of a normal American that's like, okay, Trump was a jerk, but he would figure this out. He would have helicopters, bombs, supersonic missiles, whatever it took. You know, there's something that I think that even the normal American can resonate with, right?
What I'm seeing, I believe a great thing to do, and I would support it, believe it or not, because I love the guys on the ground and I have deep relationships with some of those people in Afghanistan that supported us, is that if the person I believe is running the country, which is Ron Klain,
chief of staff of Joe Biden,
I would encourage him to reach out and call President Trump's chief of staff. There's actually precedent for that. Back in the Bay of Pigs, I believe Eisenhower came in to President
Kennedy.
Brought Eisenhower in to help him as a consultant, because this is not a time to talk about tweets. This is not a time to talk about being woke. This is a time to bring our country back to a prominent position, because when you saw those folks, that picture of all those people from Afghanistan holding onto that plane, they just wanted to get out. If we don't come together as a nation, there's not going to be a plane that we can hold on to get out. Where are we going to go?
Yeah, I'm afraid this regime is not willing to do that. And they will suffer a political price because of that.
Well, it may be. This may not just be a losing situation. This could be an extinction event for the Democrat Party. I don't think they understand.
No,
this is their ice age.
Yes. And so let's get into like how prolonged this is going to be, right? Even in the best case scenario, this doesn't get solved for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Best case scenario.
Best case scenario is they talk to people that know what they're doing on the ground. They open up gates with control. They allow force to be projected to bring in people, and they process and they get out the critical people that are under true threat. Those that helped us, that not just the ones that are going to get beat up, but the ones that are going to be killed. When they do that, they need to really, an interesting thing, Charlie, is they could fix a lot of this almost immediately if they put pressure on Pakistan, believe it or not. If we had a State Department that understood the geopolitical situation right now in that part of the world, and we just, can you imagine a State Department that called the ambassador of Pakistan and said, look, we're not playing anymore. You guys either back off or we're going to make sure that that was the last anniversary you ever celebrate as a country, because India is going to absorb you, because we're going to support them with everything we have
in Kashmir,
in Kashmir and everywhere. Just,
well, that's India's going to tension.
India's going to take it over because we can. We're funding them, and we don't have to do that. But we have to have the courage of our convictions. That's real diplomacy, and no one should ever hear about it. But they should do it. And they should get concessions. They should say, you're no longer going to support these guys right now. And we're getting our guys out. Because the Taliban have benefactors. That's how they make their money.
Yeah. Are the Chinese behind the Taliban?
I think the Chinese have provided support. I think Pakistan is the primary. I think there's Iran and China have always played a role. Yeah. And here's the strategic significance of Afghanistan that people don't talk about. They have a lot of rare earth minerals.
And it is landlocked, right?
It's landlocked with rare earth minerals. But it also shares a border with China, Pakistan, and Iran. And if we had a small contingency of people there, maybe we could have an eye on China, Pakistan, and Iran instead of just backing out. I'm not talking about leaving troops, but we have troops in South Korea. We have troops in Europe. It's not unprecedented, but what is unprecedented is the way we're treating this and just how flippant we are with, you know, we're trying to tear a Band-Aid off a wound that if we do it the wrong way, the patient bleeds to death because they just ripped it off not realizing it was on a major vessel. And the genie could be put back, but it's going to have to.
So the best case scenario is this gets wrapped up in a couple weeks, but we're not on pace for a best.
Well, not even wrapped up. We have to still establish other routes for people to get out. We have to still establish.
This is a lot. You're talking about a couple months.
Yes.
Deal here in the best case scenario.
Best case scenario, you're 3 weeks critical and 2 months.
And they're not on pace for a best case scenario right now.
They're not on pace for a scenario right now.
About a couple month crisis.
Well, it could be, but a 3 week big crisis, because again, you're running into the historical significance of 9/11. I really believe in don't contribute to conspiracy what can easily be explained by
incompetence,
because I'm looking at who's in the White House. But more importantly, back here, Charlie, I pray we fix this. And I also pray that people see elections have more than consequences, because right now the British Parliament came out against our military.
What do you mean?
I mean, against Joe Biden, way our military is not being allowed to perform.
Yes.
I mean, that's unheard of when the Brits come out like that.
And I'll be honest, though, Keith, you know, what's so stunning to me. So best case scenario, 3 weeks, we solve it. Worst case, this drags on for months into the killing season of September and October, early November. I'm really stunned we haven't seen dramatic compensating action from Biden. In a normal regime, they'd say, you know what? Oh, my goodness, we screwed up. We're bringing in 10,000 troops. I'm flying to Doha tomorrow. We're setting up a command center. Here's who's in control. It seems almost intentional flat-footedness. Am I seeing that wrong?
No, I spoke to some friends of mine that have their ears in the special operations community. And what someone told me today, and I don't know this personally, but this guy is in the know, and I've worked with him before. He said none of the special operations teams that we would have on the step to get moving have even been told to get to pre-deployment. So, again, from multiple sources, I understand we have a paralyzed leadership in the Joint Chiefs.
And they're just hoping it gets better. Their strategy is
hopium's not a strategy.
And you did you see what Biden did in the Stephanopoulos interview?
I did.
He said, man, no American's been killed yet. And he knocked on wood. Our president knocked on wood.
It's the same Joe Biden that didn't care what happened after Saigon. It's the same Joe Biden that was a racist his entire career. He is, and it's the same Joe Biden that's really not there now. The problem is the Democrats, we always say, don't have a deep bench. They're looking to the bullpen, and there's nothing there. And then they also have the problem with the southern border. Charlie, you can't put that many American weapons into the hands of terrorists and have an open border. There's no math in any type of wokeness that we're 1 + 1 = 2 on that one, because those weapons could get in the wrong hands. We have a porous border. Then we have to bring in refugees. Then we have to do the adequate
screening. We're already doing that. Yeah. Came out strong against the refugees because, first of all, we don't know who a lot of these people are. And second of all, you don't have to take them into your country. You can accommodate them in other parts of the world. You can bring them to German air bases for all I care, right? You know, this idea that they have to go to Arizona and Iowa and swing states across the country is insane. Go ahead.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys I talked to that need to leave for safety said, look, I don't want to stay gone. I want to go back to my country.
Well, that's the whole point, right? Is that all of a sudden now we have, and this is where the media lost their mind on what I said, which is we do not have an obligation to resettle them in America. We might have an obligation to help them. You could bring them to any of the multitude of air bases we have across the planet, mm-hmm. which is plenty, in, the great American empire, from Germany to Japan to South Korea. But this idea we now have to give citizenship to someone who might not really share our values. They might have helped us, but they might not share our American values.
And I'll tell you, a lot of them, though, believe it or not, Afghans, there are a lot of really good folks. We got our interpreter here a while back.
About Somalians, though, too, Keith,
Yeah. Oh, no.
Same narrative is how we got Ilhan Omar, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's... And she's so appreciative.
No, that's right.
And her family is just indebted to us forever.
We agree. Yeah. I came out strong against this because you can go into the congressional record in the 90s. You've all the Somalians are wonderful people. And Mogadishu is our fault because of our helicopter, whatever. We need to go bring in all these Somalians from Kenya. And next thing you know, Minneapolis is gone. Right. It's an unrecognizable. So that's a different conversation.
It lays bare so much of the left's narrative when you have a tragedy like this.
Yes.
Look at COVID. You see them jammed together every day. Now, I talk to people in all the hospitals in Kabul. I have a lot of friends that are doctors. I said, are you guys overrun with COVID? They're like, no. We know how to use hydroxychloroquine, and we had immunity, and yeah, it's not a thing. And I go, seriously? And one of them starts laughing, goes, look, we can't afford COVID. And he wasn't saying that people aren't dying. I mean, have you seen any mask? I mean,
well, I have seen cloths
over masks. But I'm saying,
and your tweet was terrific on that, but go ahead.
You see the C-47 or the C-17s taking off with all those Afghans stuffed in. No vaccines, no masks. But you can't get on a plane, or they're saying they don't want you on a plane without a vaccine and mask. No one was worried about those guys. No one was checking temperatures. And it lays bare this narrative that why are we becoming such a tyrannical regime where we live? And when you see what's going on there.
And so here's something I want to explore with you, Keith, in the minutes we have remaining. I don't know what time it is. Yeah, we got 10. Hour 10 minutes. Is that this is the tyranny of the weak. Is that we are being ruled in an authoritarian nature by rather weak people. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing if Biden was like the strong man who is willing to use, you know, political power. He's willing to use political power against his domestic enemies, but he's not willing to use political power against the Taliban. It's almost like I'm not willing to actually go get these Americans. Is that the word here, Keith, that is missing? Is willingness, because we have the capacity, we have the ability, we have the troops, we have the funding. Is it a willingness issue?
It's a morality issue, Charlie, and that goes to willing.
Yeah,
I know a lot of guys that are up day and night right now that don't have to be. They don't have to be involved in any of this, and they're doing it because we feel it's a
yourself moral, included. Yeah.
It's a moral issue. The founders spoke about this. They wrote letter after letter on this about morality. We cannot lose morality. And the morality is why we self-govern. And the problem is the Democrat Party doesn't self-govern their own lives. They don't have the morality in the way they legislate. So I don't think we can expect them to have the morality or the courage of their conviction to go and do the right thing when they specialize in condemning people, creating victims, so they have the right to rebel.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think this is a very important teaching moment. I just gave the speech three times. We're about to give it again, which is that critical race theory in classrooms is all fun and games until you have a crisis in Kabul. And then we value diversity, as you said, over competencies, straight out of our podcast. So we're thinking we process data the same way. And so this is a crisis. And according to you, this is not going away anytime soon. And the best case scenario is our government starts to actually promote competency in the short term to fix this. I'm not so confident. I think this is going to be a multi-month humanitarian crisis.
Charlie, there's things we need to do kinetically immediately to move and do.
What do you mean by that?
Kinetically, I mean set up these zones to get people in.
Military
strategy. But there's also a political and a state strategy to this. And that's where the lack of conviction comes in, or the lack of moral clarity. We could back down Pakistan in a heartbeat. We're the United States of America. We give them money. And there's some great people in Pakistan.
Well, I'm going to be honest.
I'm talking about the ISI.
Their government is so sneaky.
Right. So you use a big stick and you say, look, we're not going to give you money, and we're going to support the people that don't.
Yes.
And you do it with conviction. And look, they'll take you seriously because they know your backs are against the wall. That's the thing that it shocks me, is their backs are against the wall, meaning the leadership, and they're frozen. When I started working, Charlie, over 20 years ago, my boss told me one thing. He said, never do anything you know that is morally wrong that you can't live with. And he said something that I'll never forget, that I'm sure a lot of other guys have heard. He said, never do anything, not if, but when it becomes known to the American public, will shock the conscience of the nation. And what we are seeing right now in my lifetime is something that has shocked the conscience, Democrat and Republican, of our nation.
And it didn't have to be this way, right, Keith? We could have had a prudent withdrawal that would have had a concentric circle type strategy of removal of citizens, destruction of weapons, and then eventually leaving. It didn't have to be this way.
No, this is not a forced error. This is an absolute man-made, using their own words, we're a man-made disaster. I mean, it's not climate. The only climate change that they contributed to was incompetence. Yes. And when you have incompetence...
Or malevolence.
Or malevolence. Yeah. Incompetence and malevolence, their bastard stepchild is tragedy.
Yeah, and that's what we're looking
for. That's what we're seeing.
And there will be a moment in time, and it's coming, where even the most Democrat person doesn't want to see Americans slaughtered by the Taliban.
And I believe that, you know, I've seen folks that are hardcore Democrats that have come out and said, this is wrong.
Well, and the House Democrats on their call with Pelosi, it was leaked. They are screaming at her like, you do not know what this is doing in our district. I mean, you're trying to tell me that some of these Democrats in swing districts in Orange County, which is, you know, should be a center right area. It doesn't matter how Democrat they become. They don't want to see that.
No,
it is a nonstop commercial of America decline and humiliation.
There's no spinning this. It's humiliating.
Agree. And it's not going to go away. Yeah,
it's humiliating. And oh, by the way, Americans are going to die. We have a.
Do you think that's going to happen?
There's a good chance of it. I pray it doesn't. Yeah. But and I like to be an optimist because right now people watch this and I want to encourage them. I will tell you, there's good people in Pakistan. There's good people in Afghanistan. I'm not talking about the people causing the problems. I'm talking about the everyday people that want their children educated and they want a better life for them. There are people in Kabul, Charlie, that did not grow up under the old Taliban. They have never known anything but freedom in Kabul. They weren't out in the districts, it's different, but in Kabul, they have coffee shops. They're not everyone wears a covering or a hijab. Not everyone wears a burqa. And they had a freedom. And these kids are coming unglued because their limited freedom meant more to them than anything. They meant so much to a soccer player that he held on to an aircraft as it took off. And we metaphorically here are voluntarily not even getting on the plane as citizens and engaging in our politics to keep our country free. And
changing.
I think it's open. I couldn't agree with you more.
I know what you hope to happen, but realistically, what is the Biden regime going to do? Are they going to wise up or are they going to be just paralyzed by their own gutless?
The only play the Biden regime has is to ask for help from those that know what they're doing. If they don't, it's not that they don't want to do the right thing. They do not have the ability or the capacity within their current dysfunctional organization, I believe, to do the right thing.
I think they're going to be forced to do that.
I pray they are. I pray that, you know, Mark Meadows gets a call and they say, hey, look, we have a bigger problem than our political differences. We have Americans and extremists. And Charlie, can you imagine if he had President Trump come in and consult? Ironically enough,
it could help heal the nation. I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, I don't either, but yeah. I just said.
No, it would. And there are reports Jack Posobiec put out that Mark Milley is even saying he wants Trump back because he said this is a disaster.
I'll be shocked if Mark Milley's still there in a week.
You think so? Why have these generals not resigned? That's a good question.
Well, it used to be that if you didn't do something, you would resign.
Well, the Japanese culture, they would put a sword through their own stomach.
Japanese resigned permanently.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, again, I saw a meme, but it says everything, and it showed the most successful general that won World War II and Mark Milley. And Mark Milley has a Christmas tree of all of his ribbons and everything.
Yes.
And the most successful general of World War II has one little line
yes.
of ribbons.
Well, Mark Milley also couldn't pass a fitness test on his best day.
No, our generals should not be wrapped in fat. And
Lloyd Austin is the fattest general I've ever seen.
Look, I know a lot of guys that gave me inside baseball on General Milley. You know,
tell me.
On his fitness reports, as he would be written up, his nickname was Brickhead. It's not inspiring in leadership roles. And that's the problem, Charlie. It's fine if you just want to talk about wokeness and CRT, but it's absolutely tragic.
Yes.
And malfeasance when he's in a position where he's not. I don't know if he's capable of doing it. They should bring back retired generals that know what they're doing.
Yes.
And
there's plenty of
And a good
still
president
alive.
Would have already fired him and replaced him with someone that would
That's
do
right.
something. But we don't have a commander in chief.
No, we don't. All right, we got to wrap it up. Email us, everybody, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, it's tpusa.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Open up your beautiful phone right now, and there's a podcast app there, Charlie Kirk Show, and your podcast, The Scalpel.
The Scalpel.
With Dr. Keith Rose. Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey your secret safe with the NSA. And God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.